This is Jeff Blankford welcoming you to the November 14th, 2018 edition of Takes on the World, a program on international affairs that comes your way the second and fourth Wednesdays of every month, and every other fifth Wednesday when I open the phones to get your takes on the world. Last Tuesday on the evening of our midterm elections, NSA whistleblower Edward Snowden spoke by video from Moscow to a conference in Israel hosted by the Ornstein Hoshin public relations firm about the world of surveillance, in which we are all participants, and noted in particular the role played by an Israeli high-tech firm in the murder of Saudi journalist Jamal Khashoggi. It's an aspect that was recently touched upon by CNN, but otherwise ignored by the U.S. media. A little later in the program, I'm going to play you excerpts from Snowden's talk. Yesterday's New York Times reported that shortly after Khashoggi was murdered last month, a member of the Saudi assassination team instructed a superior over the phone to, quote, tell your boss, end quote, believed to be Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman, that the operatives had carried out their mission. That was according to three people familiar with a recording of Khashoggi's killing collected by Turkish intelligence and shared last month with CIA Director Gina Haspel. While the Crown Prince was not mentioned by name, American intelligence officials believed your boss was a reference to Prince Mohammed. Maher Abul Aziz Mutreb, one of 15 Saudis sent to Istanbul to confront Khashoggi at the Saudi consulate, made the phone call and spoke in Arabic, the people said. While translations of the Arabic may differ, noted the Times, the people briefed on the call said Mutreb also said to the aide words to the effect, quote, the deed was done, end quote. The wait-and-see response of the Trump administration to Khashoggi's murder was apparently viewed by the Saudi Crown Prince as an indication that the U.S. would not take any serious action against him, and he demonstrated that by escalating his country's bombing attacks in Yemen. War Secretary James Mattis had called for a ceasefire on all sides in that ongoing war and said the U.S. would no longer provide in-air refueling of Saudi bombers, which began under the Obama administration. He didn't know whether the U.S. would continue supplying the intelligence required for Saudi targeting. Almost all the Saudi jets and helicopters and the missiles they have fired in that war have been purchased from the United States, which means that Washington could call an immediate halt to the bloodshed should it decide to do so. While there has been movement in Congress to halt America's contribution to the carnage in Yemen, the public has been largely silent. It was not an issue in the midterm elections, and those who might ordinarily be expected to protest have turned out to be preoccupied with the Mueller investigation and Trump's firing of Attorney General Jeff Sessions. While there are a number of positives in the midterm election results, that Israel's influence in Congress only increased was not, in my mind, one of them. In the House, as veteran Democratic Party apparatchik and pro-Israel advocate Ann Lewis pointed out, the Democratic victory in the House means that Elliot Engel will be chair of Foreign Relations Committee. He's not going to talk about support for U.S.-Israel relationship, she said. He's going to demonstrate it, end quote. Same with Nita Lowey, who is expected to chair the Appropriations Committee, which would be the body that would theoretically have to approve cutting funding for Israel, and there's no chance of that happening. Both are Jewish and represent heavily Jewish districts in New York, but Engel's constituency and priorities go well beyond that, as was indicated in an interview in the Jerusalem Post while in Israel in September 2015, after the bruising fight over the Iran deal, which he opposed. Engel was in Israel as the chair of the delegation of the International Council of Jewish Parliamentarians, which operates under the auspices of the World Jewish Congress. At the time, he expressed concern for support for Israel as a bipartisan issue in the U.S. after polls showed significantly greater support for Israel among Republicans than among Democrats. According to the Jerusalem Post, Engel warned against one party billing itself as the pro-Israel party, saying that runs contrary to Israel's interests, which from his record appears to be a primary concern. AIPAC, Israel's domestic lobby, was pleased with last Tuesday's results, noting in an email that, quote, virtually all the victors in this year's election have issued position papers and statements reflecting their strong commitment to strengthening the U.S.-Israeli relationship. End quote. In the Senate, three Democrats who opposed the Iran deal also won their Senate races, as did Nevada Representative Jackie Rosen, a former synagogue president who said she would have voted against the Iran deal had she been in Congress at the time. In April 2017, as a House member, Rosen and Colorado Republican Doug Lamborn introduced the Defend Israel Act of 2017, a bipartisan bill that would accelerate appropriations funding for Israel's anti-missile defense systems. In introducing the bill, Rosen issued the standard boilerplate statement about America's need to help Israel defend itself, our alleged shared democratic values, and the importance of our strategic partnership. How it would benefit the people of Nevada, she didn't say, but since the bill was redundant and apparently introduced by both politicians to catch the attention of pro-Israel donors, what it actually meant for Nevadans was irrelevant. What appeared at first to be another win for Israel was in Arizona, where Kyrsten Sinema, one of 25 House Democrats to vote against the Iran deal, came from behind to win her Senate race. The Washington Free Beacon, a neocon online journal in the nation's capital, quoted an Arizona Democrat lawmaker who has worked with Sinema as saying, quote, "She's trying to scrub a 10-year record of radicalism on all aspects, and she doesn't realize you can't erase things you've said and done for the sake of running for office. For us Democrats, it's a very scary situation because we don't want our reputation to be diminished by one ambitious politician. Many of us pro-Israel politicians don't want to see her win because it will diminish our position on Israel," end quote. According to the article, Sinema's foray into the anti-Israel activism began in the early 2000s when she organized for the American Alliance for Peace and Justice, a group whose members had denounced Israel's disproportionate use of violence and oppression. The group also decried U.S. military aid to Israel, as well as the expansion of Israeli settlements into, quote, Palestinian lands, end quote. Sinema was elected as a Democrat to the Arizona legislature in 2005, following a stint as a spokesperson for Ralph Nader's Green Party, which had advocated ending U.S. aid to Israel. As a lawmaker in the state house, according to the Washington Free Beacon, Sinema continued to fraternize with Israel's fiercest opponents, including the anti-war group Code Pink, which has promoted conspiracy theories claiming that the so-called Israel lobby exerts ultimate control over U.S. foreign policy, end quote. Actually, Code Pink does not claim that, but one might conclude that the attitude of Sinema's fellow Democrats is an indication that it comes close to doing so, at least in the Middle East. How else should we interpret the expressed desire of at least some of Sinema's fellow Democrats if they would prefer her to lose a U.S. Senate seat to a Republican rival because of her earlier positions in Israel? Something to think about. But anyway, calling Sinema ambitious, however, was not an overstatement. Today's New York Times reports that she was one of only two dozen Democrats in the House who voted in favor of Kate's Law, a bill to expand maximum sentences for foreigners who reenter the country after being deported. Sinema also voted for legislation to intensify the screening of refugees and co-sponsored legislation calling for regular analysis of terrorist threats on the border with Mexico. Not surprisingly, she has also explicitly voiced support for ICE, Immigration and Customs Enforcement. And so it goes. I frequently have to go to the Israeli press to find news about the United States and Israel that the mainstream media chooses to ignore. That's where I learned from the English language Times of Israel that U.S. President Donald Trump watched the results come in from Tuesday's midterm elections at the White House with a number of prominent supporters, among them Jewish billionaires Sheldon Adelson and Stephen Schwarzman. Adelson, says the paper, a casino magnate known for his hawkish pro-Israel views, shelled out $112,250,000 for Republicans during the 2018 election cycle, according to a campaign finance monitor, making him the top overall donor in the midterms. Adelson, who was joined by his wife Miriam at the White House, also contributed heavily to Trump's 2016 election campaign, and earlier this year attended the opening of the U.S. Embassy in Jerusalem, a move he had long pushed for. Schwarzman, who, according to the Center for Responsive Politics, gave Republicans $11,750,000 for this year's elections, is the CEO of a private equity firm, the Blackstone Group, and is considered a close friend of Trump's. Then on Saturday, Trump announced that among several others living, dead, and somewhere in between, he was awarding a Presidential Medal of Freedom, the highest non-military honor that a civilian can win, to Adelson's wife, Miriam, who is an Israeli. The medal recognizes people who have made, quote, an especially meritorious contribution to the security or national interest of the United States, world peace, cultural or other significant public or private endeavors, end quote. It is not limited to U.S. citizens. What Ms. Adelson has done was not mentioned. In case you're serious, the dead were Elvis Presley, Babe Ruth, and Anthony Scalia, and Orrin Hatch, retiring after 41 years in the Senate, I would classify as in between. On the Thursday before the midterms and the night before synagogues and temples around the country would be filled with Jews and non-Jews mourning the slaying in Pittsburgh of 11 Jewish worshippers by a raving hater of Jews and immigrants, a very different kind of event took place at the Beverly Hills Hilton Hotel. That's where the Friends of the Israel Defense Forces held its annual gala dinner and broke its fundraising record, taking in $60.4 million, all of which are tax-exempt, to benefit members of the Israeli army, which has not fought a major war since 1973, and its primary duty is enforcing an occupation of Palestinian land that most of humanity, including the World Court at The Hague, considers to be illegal. It's important to consider that when reading the words from the stage describing in heroic terms the acts of various Israeli soldiers who had the misfortune to be among the rare number of wounded in suppressing resistance to the occupation. It's also important to consider that when at last count there were just under 4,000 homeless U.S. veterans in the L.A. area who actually spent months in war-torn areas, some on multiple tours, and who were suffering to some degree from PTSD. Like, for example, David Long, the Marine vet, not homeless but troubled, who carried out the slaughter last week in Thousand Oaks. Their existence, I would guess, was far from the minds of those partying for a foreign army, which is why, as usual, I suspect, the mainstream media printed not a word about the event, with the Hollywood trade organ Variety being the exception. It wasn't that they didn't know about it. The Associated Press and Business Wire put out the FIDF's report on the benefit to their clients. Was it not newsworthy when two billionaires from opposing parties, both Trump's bosom buddy Adelson and Haim Saban, a major funder of the Democrats, who regularly host the event, each contributed $10 million to reach the record total? There was no reported comment from Adelson, but Saban was, quote, thrilled that so many members of our community, including major Hollywood figures, are coming together to help us support the brave men and women of the Israel Defense Forces, end quote. On Sunday night, some of those Israelis, described as Palestinians, snuck into Gaza to carry out a secret operation at a time when international efforts were being made to reduce the increasing tensions between Israel and Hamas and ease the dire situation of the Palestinians who have been under an Israeli blockade since 2007. The Israelis were discovered, and the incident came close to starting another armed confrontation along the lines of what occurred in December 2008 and again in 2012 and 2014, when much of Gaza was physically destroyed by Israeli jets and missiles, courtesy of the American taxpayers by way of their members of Congress. The operation was foiled, but a senior commander of Hamas and six other Palestinians were killed as the Israelis retreated with a senior officer, its only casualty. Hamas responded by launching 460 rockets toward Israel, which then launched air attacks on Gaza, destroying a number of high-rise buildings and the Hamas radio and TV station. Four mediators, Egypt, the UN, Norway, and Switzerland, helped achieve a ceasefire. According to reports, Hamas and Palestinian Islamic Jihad said in a joint statement that they are, quote, committed to the ceasefire as long as Israel doesn't break it and doesn't attack the Palestinian people, end quote. Israel's security cabinet emerged from a seven-hour meeting and released a short statement saying that the Israeli military was instructed to, quote, continue its strikes as needed, end quote. Four of its most hawkish ministers opposed the ceasefire, Israeli media reported, Defense Minister Avigdor Lieberman, head of the Israeli Beitenu Party, Justice Minister Eilat Shaked of the Jewish Home Party, Education Minister Naftali Bennett, who heads the Jewish Home Party, and Environmental Protection Minister Zev Elkin of Likud. In Israel, it should be noted that unlike the United States, it takes the approval of the majority of the cabinet before war can be launched. However, this morning it was reported that Avigdor Lieberman has resigned as defense minister and called for new elections. And the Jewish Home Party has said that unless Naftali Bennett, who has advocated the annexation of the West Bank and expulsion of the Palestinians, be promoted to defense minister, they will pull out of the government. So that is what is happening now. And so hopefully we do not have another war in Gaza. This has been Jeff Blankfort. Thanks for listening.